नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया। सुकं मैत्रियकं दैत्या देह योगिन देहिनां सर्वत्र लभ्यते दैवाद् यथा दुःखमयन्नतः। One person. Sukha maindrinyakam daitya deha yogena dehinam sarvatra labhyate dhaivad yata dukamayat sukham happiness Aindriyakam, with reference to the material senses. Daitya, all my dear friends born in demoniac families. Deha yogena, because of possessing a particular type of material body. Dehinam, of all embodied living entities. Sarvatra, everywhere in any form of life. Labhyate, is obtainable, daivat, by a superior arrangement. Yata, just as, dukam, unhappiness, yatnataha, without endeavor. Translation, purport, by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Prahlad Maharaj continued, my dear friends born of demoniac families, the happiness perceived with reference to the sense objects by contact with the body can be obtained in any form of life according to one's past fruitive activities. Such happiness is automatically obtained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress. Purport, in the material world, in any form of life, there is some so-called happiness and so-called distress. No one invites distress in order to suffer, but still it comes. Similarly, even if we do not endeavor to obtain the advantages of material happiness, we shall obtain them automatically. This happiness and distress are obtainable in any form of life without endeavor. Thus, there is no need to waste time and energy fighting against distress or working very hard for happiness. Our only business in the human form of life should be to revive our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus become qualified to return home back to Godhead. Material happiness and distress come as soon as we accept a material body, regardless of what form. We cannot avoid such happiness and distress under any circumstances. The best use of human life, therefore, lies in reviving our relationship with the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So Prahlad Maharaj is continuing his instructions to his friends. So the third line says here, Savatra Labhyate Dhaivad. Everywhere in any form of life, daivat, by a superior arrangement. So superior arrangement here refers to one's karmic fruits. This daivat means divine. It also refers to providence, providential arrangement. So Prabhupada is translated also as one's, the result of one's fruit of activities, one's past fruit of activities. So it refers to karma. According to one's karma, you'll get a certain type of circumstances in life, and also you have certain type of psychological responses to those circumstances of life. They're mechanical. So whatever's happening in the material world is basically a mechanism. So according to the mechanism, one living entity will get certain circumstances of life, good or bad, and there will be certain type of psychological responses programmed in the psychology to those circumstances. All of this is due to daivad or karma. For example, if someone slaps you, you all have different ways of dealing with that, probably. Some of you might slap back. How many of you fall in that category? And some of you may call the police. Some of you may go into a corner and start crying. So you all have different ways of dealing with the various circumstances of life, as do I. And these different ways of dealing with circumstances, when not guided by shastra, is just programmed in the psychology. So you can't avoid the circumstances of life, nor can you avoid the psychological responses to life. You can transcend them. Transcending them doesn't mean, at least initially, it doesn't mean not experiencing them whatsoever. Transcending them means you can understand that you're different from those circumstances and also from those psychological responses, although you will be aware of them. You follow? Baladevi Dabhushana gives a very nice example in the verse Yanisha Sarvabhutanam from the Bhagavad Gita, wherein Krishna says that what is night for a common man is a time of awakening for the self-control. What is night for common men? Self-realization. No, not sense gratification. They're awake to that. For common men, what is night for them is self-realization, and what is the time of awakening is sense gratification. And for the self-realized person whom Krishna is in context speaking about in this verse, what is night for them is a program of sense gratification, the world of duality. That is night for them, and they're awake to self-realization. You understand? So in other words, the common man, they're awake to the world of duality, which means they're constantly disturbed by so-called happiness and distress, right? You follow? And they're asleep to the self behind all these mental situations of life. Whereas a self-realized person, he's asleep to the world of duality. Huh? Paschato Muni, he's called the Muni who sees that there's a self behind all what appears to be happening. There's a consciousness behind apparent reality, gross and subtle. And so he's not disturbed by apparent reality, although he perceives it. Paschato Muni, so Baladeva Dabhushana says Paschata means to see. He sees it in the same way, this is the example given by Baladeva Dabhushana, which is a very nice example. He says he sees it in the same way that a dancing girl with a pot on her head is aware of her audience, but all her attention is focused on the pot. You understand? So a girl is performing a dance performance, and she has one pot on her head. I saw this in Goa, actually. A girl doing a tightrope act and she was doing a tightrope act and had things on her head and was, you know, it was pretty cool. So although the dancing girl will be aware of the surrounding, all her focus is really on the pot, making sure that the pot balances, yes? So similarly, the self-realized person is aware of the world of duality. He sees it, but all his attention is on the self, different from matter. And therefore, he remains undisturbed by the world of duality. You follow? So this is mentioned in the third line. Sarvatra labhyate daiva. According to daiva, provenance, everyone is experiencing some circumstances of life and some sort of psychological responses to that life, to those circumstances, excuse me. Deha yogena dehinam. This is due to deha yoga, connection with a material body. To see something as good or bad depends on the type of body that you got, gross and subtle. Again, which is a result of daiva. Daiva means your karma. So according to your karma, you get a certain type of gross body and a certain type of psychology also. That is deha yogena dehinam. So the soul isn't combined with a particular sort of body. And according to that body, then there is good and bad. Good and bad actually does not relate to the circumstances per se, but relates to the mental concoction about the circumstance and the subtle body. So therefore it says, so-called, Prabhupada's translating, the so-called good and bad, sukam, aindriyakam, daitya, o son of born of demoniac families, daitya, sukam, aindriyakam, the happiness with reference to the material senses combined with their objects is due to deha yogana, is due to the type of body and psychology that you got. It doesn't exactly mean the circumstances are good or bad. Just like, for example, a polar bear. If a polar bear is in Antarctica, this is a very nice thing. And if a polar bear is in the middle of the city of Chicago during the summer season, it is not a very nice thing. Is that because the city of Chicago is worse off than Antarctica? What do you say? Saying, okay, it's an enlightened answer. Huh? It is not his natural habitat. Well, how has that become his? He said it was not his natural habitat. Because it is in reference to the type of body that he has. So that type of body is perceiving that Antarctica is better, Chicago is not as good. Right? So it has nothing to do with Antarctica or Chicago, but everything to do with the type of body that he has. So that means that happiness and distress is relating to the body and mind. It has nothing to actually do with reality. So for those who transcend, again, transcending doesn't mean non-awareness, but rather understanding that there's something behind the apparent reality that has nothing to do with the reality. There for them, for such persons, there really is no happiness or distress. It's just reality and its various expressions. Reality is variegated. And because reality is variegated, a self-realized person just sees that this is just another variety of material existence. So he's not disturbed by birth or death, which is just another variety of material existence, and so on. So Prahlad Maharaj is telling his friends here that that so-called happiness, which is relating to the senses contacting sense objects, is simply a mental concoction. It is due to the body. Deha yogena dehinam. And everyone's going to experience that according to daivat, according to the type of karma that they have. But just in the same way that one, yata dukam ayatnataha, just in the same way as one gains distress, even though one does not endeavor for it. You all get distress probably more regularly than happiness, isn't it? Another mental concoction. So no one wakes up thinking like, okay, while they're, brushing their hair or something, how can I be distressed today? You don't even have to think about it. You just accidentally brush something too hard. And distress is coming in so many variety of ways. So just as distress is coming, so also happiness is coming. So Prabhupada is writing here in the purport. He says clearly, thus there is no need to waste time and energy fighting against distress or working very hard for happiness. Once you understand the law of karma, then you understand that there is absolutely no point in endeavoring for happiness or counteracting distress. I often give the image of, it is like the current of Ganga flowing from the Gangotri. If you go very high in the Himalaya mountains, in order to take bath in the Ganga, you have to hold on to chains because the current is so powerful. And you have to hold on to the chain, and if you let go of the chain, immediately the current will wash you away. So similarly, the current of one's karma is flowing, and there's nothing anyone can do about that, except for the Supreme Lord. There's nothing anyone can do about that. Therefore, simply endeavoring for happiness or working hard to counteract distress is really a waste of time. A waste of time that one can only appreciate if he can understand the metaphysics underpinning reality as he sees it, right? The only reason a person would endeavor for happiness or endeavor to avoid distress is because they don't understand the mechanics or the metaphysics that underpin the apparent reality that they perceive. In other words, they have no understanding of ontology. And also, even if they hear it from literatures like the Bhagavad Gita, they have no belief in those things. Ahankara vimudatma karta hamiti mayate. They think, I am the doer, I can do everything due to great false ego. But once you understand what is actually the material nature from hearing from sacred texts like the Vedas, then you realize why waste time? Except for doing one thing, Prabhupada writes here, our only business in the human form of life should be to revive our relationship with Krishna and thus become qualified to return home back to Godhead. Understand? So I just pulled up one verse. Does this have a code to it? Okay, no. This nice verse from Narada Muni to Vyasa, 5th chapter of the 1st canto, chapter 18. You know this verse? Tasyaiva heto prayateta kovido. Prabhupada will quote this a lot. Nalapyate ya brahmatam upar yadha. You know this verse? Of course not. So it says here, kovida. Kovida means one who is learned. Understand? Prabhupada's translated here is one who is philosophically inclined. You understand? In other words, those who are not philosophically inclined, they take the apparent reality to be reality. And then they just carry on according to appearances, like a deer chasing a mirage in the desert. But one who is inclined to ask questions, such as, why am I distressed even though I don't want distress? Why is it so hard to get happiness even though I'm endeavoring very hard? And so on. These sorts of existential questions, they begin to try to understand something deeper behind appearances. You understand? This is called the kavi or kovida. One who is philosophically inclined, then tasyeva heto prayateta, he should endeavor. Prayateta means he should endeavor, eva, only for that purpose which cannot be obtained by karmic situations. Obtaining happiness and distress, since objects, you'll get according to your karma. But what cannot be obtained by the current of karma? What is that cannot be obtained by the current of karma? That is Krishna, bhakti, or self-realization if you want to keep it really broad. This, nalapite ya brahmatama paryuda, you should endeavor only for that which is not obtained by this current of karma, from the topmost position of Brahmaloka down to the lowest. So in the whole material world, you can obtain all these various positions in the realm of matter by karma. But what is that you cannot obtain by karma? Krishna. Then he goes on, talapyate dukava anyata sukam. He says, as far as happiness and distress is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in course of time, just as one obtains miseries, even though we do not desire them. Same as this particular verse. So the point is that if there should be some endeavor, it should only be for Krishna consciousness. But in order to make that endeavor for Krishna consciousness strong, one has to hear something about the Maya Shakti. This is why in the Bhagavatam, in the essence of Bhagavatam, four topics are discussed by Krishna to Lord Brahma. They're Chaturshloki of Bhagavatam. Gana Vigana, Sarahasyam, and Tadhangam. Four topics are there in the essence of Bhagavatam presented in four topics. You know what the four topics are? What I just say. Gana Vigana, Sarahasyam, and Tadanga. Tadanga means a component part of the Rahasya. So Gana means knowledge. Knowledge refers to Bhagavan and his internal energy. Vigana means knowledge of Maya. Vigana actually literally means, we usually translate as realization. But in order to realize Bhagavan, what is required? Knowledge of Maya is required. Why is knowledge of Maya required to realize Bhagavan? Because Maya is very distracting. Apparent reality is very convincing. Just like how many of you believe that you're the body? Full on, we're fully convinced. So apparent reality is very convincing. Therefore, vigana, realization, in order to gain realization, knowledge of Maya is also required. So an aspect of the knowledge of Maya is to understand how the material energy is working. Once you understand the material energy is working, it takes away the charm of material existence. Otherwise, material existence is very charming. Just like a mirage in the desert, it's very convincing and charming. I had the experience of seeing a mirage, and have you had the experience of seeing a mirage before? I had the experience once. I shared when I went to a Burning Man event, for Christian consciousness, of course. And the Burning Man event is basically a sense gratification program in the middle of a desert. This is how desperate people are. They go to a desert to enjoy sense gratification. Anyway. And then I was there, and as hot as anything, there is no water, you know. All the water is brought in from nearby local towns in big, big tanks. Otherwise, there's no water. So one day, I was apparently delusional. And I saw that, oh, there's one lake is there. One lake is there. And people are walking towards the lake. Because at first I thought, no, maybe it's a mirage, even though I had never seen a mirage before. But I said, no, no, people are walking towards the lake, actually. So I also began walking toward the lake. And I was walking for 20 minutes, and it wasn't getting any closer. So a doubt came. I was like, wait a minute. So then I turned around to see if people were really walking in that direction. And they weren't. And I realized that the people walking toward the mirage were also part of the mirage. I was actually a little dehydrated and deluded. So the mirage of Maya is very charming and convincing. So once you ascertain that this is a mirage, what happens? You still continue to see the mirage. It's not that the mirage suddenly dissipates once you ascertain that it's a mirage. You still continue to see it, but you don't chase after it anymore. Because now I cannot get water from that place. You understand? So knowledge of Maya Shakti is required to remove the charm of apparent reality so that you don't feel, you still perceive it, but you understand that there's nothing I can gain from that. Then you become qualified to realize the rahasyam. Rahasyam means prema, and tadanga means the sadhana which leads to prema. Like that. I not describe in detail because that's not required for the point that I was making. So in this way, hearing these sorts of, you find that in all the teachings of the Bhagavatam, there's a nice portion related to the Maya Shakti, understanding the way the Maya Shakti works, because that is required for moving the charm of material existence from our eyes and giving us the intelligence, the kovida, the learnedness to pursue that which cannot be obtained by the current of karma. Are there any questions about this? That's the class. Short discussion. Oh, I always keep it short. No? Okay. Yeah, Stevie.
According to the Vedas, if I endeavor to perform pious activities, I can be elevated to the heavenly planets. And so that kind of seems to contradict, or that seems to kind of, I guess, stifle this kind of statement here that he's trying to get you disinterested in any kind of material activity by saying that, oh, either way, it's pointless because happiness and distress are coming automatically. But it seems that if you do pious activities, you get to enjoy in the heavenly planets next lifetime.
Yeah. So. Okay, so if I do pious activities, I get a pious result. If I do sinful activities, I get a sinful result. So it seems like this contradicts the whole discussion. But it doesn't, because piety is due to the modes of material nature. So one's being inclined towards piety is due to the influence of motive goodness. One being inclined towards sin is due to the mode of passion and ignorance. So in this way, as Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, that actually all these activities are carried out by the modes of material nature. And so in a particular life, you may endeavor for a particular result, but you won't get the fruit of that result in this life. It may come in the next life. So your endeavor is based on the modes, and the results of experiences that you're getting in this life are based on previous actions performed in the modes of material nature. So in this way, everything that is happening in the material world is really carried out by a mechanism, namely the modes of material nature, the Maya Shakti. And that way the two don't really contradict themselves. So someone like the Karma Mimamsas, they have the understanding that I'll perform pious activity, I'll go to the heavenly realms, and then when I'm exhausted, I come back down, I continue pious activities, I go back up. And this way you can just eternally sense and joy. This is their idea, the Karma Mimamsa. This seems like a very clever idea also. But the only problem with that idea is that you're not the controller of the Maya Shakti. And so inevitably, the nature of material existence is so perplexing that even a person who is dedicated to piety accidentally does something impious and receives a result of that. And a person dedicated to impiety happens to do something like, you know, going to a dham and render service to a Vaishnava just on accident. And he gets a result of such service. Such is the perplexing nature of the material existence. So as long as one is not the controller of the Maya Shakti, he's deluded by the Maya Shakti. And he's not in control of what's actually taking place. If he was in control, and this is discussed by Krishna in the 11th canto, chapter 10 of Bhagavatam, if the soul was in control of what's taking place in the material nature, then he would never bring himself distress. He can be controlled the type of experiences that he has, but he's not. So in this way, the literatures of the Vedas, they do encourage pious activity. By doing this, you can get this result in a future life. And building that encouragement is an understanding of something spiritual, because you realize that you're not going to get it in this life, but you get it in the next life. Particularly for those who endeavor for swarga, they understand, well, I'm not going to get swarga in this self-same body. So impregnated, but even the encouragement for piety is some level of spiritual under metaphysics, some level of encouragement to understand that there's a spiritual underpinning for all of existence. But that experience is ultimately beyond your control, because Maya Shakti is beyond one's control. So you're simply bound up in this way. Even like someone thinks they have a really good idea about doing something, where did that idea come from? Well, I just thought of it, like, out of the blue. No, you didn't. Maya gave you that idea to keep you bound up in the material energy. So any idea not encouraged by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra is basically, you know, Maya playing in the mind of the conditioned soul, convincing him to remain in the material existence like this. You follow? Like that. Any other comments, questions, concerns? Yes, no? Masaji, oh, Stevie.
Thank you. I appreciate your class so much. And I'm just wondering, but isn't it also that the result of some, it's just not permanent? So someone does something pious and gets awarded to go to the heavenly planets, but it's just not permanent. They can fall at any time. They have to come back to the material world, essentially. So that's no award.
Right. Yeah, definitely anything material is temporary and therefore ultimately frustrating according to the attachment to the temporary something. But then in terms of his question, it's just like, well, that's all right. I'll just continue to perform temporary activities to get better temporary situation. And then when that fall down from that, I'll carry on with this whole process and, you know keep it positive. Let's be positive, you know.
It's all good. Yeah. It's all good.
Why are you being negative? You know, let's keep positive and, you know, yeah, this is a situation, but you know, like that. So the purpose of especially Srimad Bhagavatam is to become thoroughly pessimistic about material existence. At least initially. We may, you know, in our... And enthusiasm, well, everything has a relationship to Krishna. No, it doesn't. Not initially. That may be true ontologically speaking, ultimately. But in order for us to really gain that appreciation, you know, first of all, Narayana-vritti is there. So you gain a sort of pessimism about material existence. In an article in the SSR where Lynn Lutwick is writing Srila Prabhupada, and she's complaining that Prabhupada's disciples are too negative. And that he should handpick these pieces of sunshine. She uses some language like this, and make sure that they are speaking, you know, properly. It's about love, and love is, and love should be allowed to be. Like this, she's writing Srila Prabhupada, and then Srila Prabhupada responds to her letter very thoroughly. And he, in the like first paragraph or two, he apologizes for the enthusiasm of the devotees, and he says yes, because of their being new. They may overindulge in some of the negative topics because they're afraid of being, again, victim of these things. So they may overindulge in that, and you should forgive them. But as far as you should be concerned, Ms. Ludwig, this material world is negative. And then the rest of the letter, which is like 3 or 4 pages in SSR, is just about how the material world is negative. And then in the middle of the article, he said, and also you have mentioned love in many places of your letter, but you should know that there is no love in this material world. And then he goes on to harp about how there is no love in the material world. So in this way, Bhagavatam is there to inspire a pessimism towards material existence. Otherwise, you'll continue to pursue it. So like this, you hear these messages.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I was wondering, you said how the pious and impious activities are impelled by modes of material nature.
Yes, Krishna says, what is that verse? Kamaish tashter pritigyana prapadnyante anyadevataha tam tam niyamam astaya pakrita niyatasvaya. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Kamaish tashter pritigyana, those whose knowledge has been stolen by kama. Then what is the result? Prapadnyante anyadevataha. They worship devatas. Devatas in modern world means superstars, movie stars, whatever. Anya devataha, other devatas other than me, in other words. Tam tam niyamam astaya pakritam niyatasvaya. And the regulations that they follow correspond to the pakriti in which they're confined. So if they're confined in the mode of goodness, they worship corresponding devatas, passion corresponding devatas, ignorance corresponding devatas. According to how they're confined by pakriti, then they're choosing an object of worship and the methods used for worshiping that particular deity. So yes, it is impelled by Prakriti.
So then, what impels a person's devotional service?
Sadhu Sangha. What impels devotional service is devotional service. Without bhakti, no one can do bhakti. Bhakti is the cause of bhakti. And the result of bhakti is bhakti. Understand? Bhakti is the cause of bhakti, and the result of bhakti is bhakti. So how we understand that, so bhakti is caused by bhakti. So the bhakti that lives in sadhu, sadhu is known as Ashraya Vigraha. He is the abode of bhakti. That's where bhakti lives. Just like we live inside the temple, bhakti lives in the house of a devotee's heart. And so by that sadhu sangha, what happens that one gets? Shraddha. Adhau Shraddha, right? We say like that. In the beginning, adhau. Adao in the beginning means what? In the beginning you get sadhu sangha. And in some senses that is its own stage. Adao is one stage and then shraddha is the next stage. In that way it's 10 stages. You can think of it like that. Adao. In the beginning there is sadhu sangha. And from that sadhu sangha, shraddha takes birth. Isn't it? What is that? Bhakti Lata Bija, Brahmanda Brahmite, Kona Bhagyavan Jiva, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai, Bhakti Lata Bija. Bhakti Lata Bija refers to Shraddha. You understand? So Brahmanda Brahmite, after wandering all over the cosmos due to the strong current of karma, if one is Bhagyavan Jiva, fortunate Jiva, then what happens? Guru Krishna Prasade Pai, by the mercy of the Lord, you get association of Guru. You get the association of Guru by the mercy of Guru. And then what happens? Bhakti Lata Bija, he implants the seed of Shraddha. So that means bhakti is the cause of bhakti. You understand? The spiritual energy is the cause of pursuing the spiritual energy. And the devotees are, we were hearing yesterday, the devotees are vessels of fragrance. Acharya Nishtha gave his own import to that, which was satisfying, but I still want to ask a bona fide source. Just for confirmation. But the devotees are vessels of fragrance. Just as fragrance attracts a person towards the object which is emitting the fragrance. Yes? If you smell something really good, what do you think all this Axe Effect, Old Spice, perfume, what is that? What is the point of all of this? Vessels of fragrance, right? Actually, the body is PU. If it's natural scent, it's not very appealing. So therefore, Listerine bottles, bubble gum, they got all the stuff they put in the mouth. And why? Because the scent, when there's a scent emanated, it attracts an object towards the object emanating the scent. So devotees are vessels of fragrance. They emit spiritual energy, if you will, and attracts a living entity towards spiritual energy. So the cause of bhakti is sadhu sangha. Or you can say the cause of bhakti is bhakti, which impels sadhus to roam around the world and distributing bhakti. Krishna bhakti jama mula hai sadhu sangha. The root cause of Krishna bhakti is sadhu sangha. We hear like this. Yes, answers the question. Stevie.
You mentioned the Bhagavad Gita verse, Viganam and Viganam.
That was Bhagavatam.
Oh, Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
And you're saying that in order to get out of the material world, we need knowledge both of Bhagavan and of the Maya Shakti.
The Maya Shakti.
So my question was, could that process of becoming detached from the Maya Shakti by learning about it, could that be considered directly part of bhakti, or would it be something that supports bhakti but is different from it?
Okay, so there's inherent bhakti, known as Swarup Siddha Bhakti, which means hearing about Krishna, kirtan of Krishna, remembering Krishna, and so on. This is called inherent bhakti. And then there's things that are not inherently devotional, but it supports bhakti. This is called as Sangha Siddha Bhakti. It supports bhakti, but is not inherently devotional, such as meditating on the difference between matter and spirit. That is not an inherently devotional activity. But when used to support bhakti, it is called as Sangha Siddha Bhakti. So is hearing about the Maya Shakti Sangha Siddha Bhakti? No, it is inherent bhakti because it's part of the process of Shravana. So even when Vyasadeva went into samadhi, the samadhi that impels his writing the Bhagavatam in the first place, what does he see in his samadhi? He sees Bhagavan along with his internal energy, and then he sees also the Maya Shakti, who was under full control. This was part of his samadhi that led to the composing of the Bhagavatam in its form that we have today. So hearing about Maya Shakti is part of the process of Shravanam. And you'll see that even in all the prayers of the great souls, they all talk about Maya Shakti. Even the gopis, Tavakatamritam, Tapta Jivanam, they're aware that the jivas are suffering due to the influence of the Maya Shakti, and that the kata of Krishna is the nectar by which they can become free from that. So it is part of inherent bhakti to hear about Maya Shakti, especially for the sadhakas. Of course, in the spiritual world, it's not like that becomes a very important point of discussion. How is the material energy bewildering us? There is no material energy. So they're not talking about those things in the spiritual reality. But it is still part of inherent bhakti. It is part of what we hear from the Bhagavatam. Om Tat Sat. Anything else? No? Okay then. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.